Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager. I just realised you didn't mic check me, so I don't know how loud I am.
It's fine.
Okay. Hello.
It's not fine. No, it's fine. Keep going.
I'm Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
Hello, my name's Matt, and I'm the manager.
And I'm Joe, and I'm here for bass-related queries. Mark, you did a bit of a different intro just then.
It sounded really macabre.
Yeah, you were like, you have the same tone on every single intro, but this one was
really
different. Yeah, yeah.
I just tried to do it normal.
All right.
Just tried to do my thing.
I'm trying to think of something different to say, because...
What, other than I'm Matt and I'm the manager?
Yeah.
I can at least...
Frank and I'm the...
Well, I just, you know...
I can dress it up
Does it really matter that I'm the manager?
We should get Frank the janitor on sometime. I mean, he's played a crucial role for many years.
Yeah, he is good as well.
He's so good. I mean, the shop is clean.
Clean as a whistle.
How is everyone?
Good.
Yeah,
not bad. Charming.
I feel like we're out of practice and I don't know why.
I was near last week.
Yeah, Jay was off last week.
And Matt was off the week before.
Was it?
No.
No, you were off.
Last week.
No, the week before.
It was me and Joe. The week before, I was off the week before.
So this is the first full house in a fortnight.
But I just feel like we're... I don't know. Has it been a long time since we've done a podcast or something?
No, it's been a week. Well, slightly longer.
A week and 2 days.
No, but a week since Mark's done a podcast, but it's actually a week and 2 days because we're doing it late because you wanted to go climbing.
Yeah. It seems like a long week, and one of the reasons is that Joe and I were at Breakout Festival this weekend. It's early to dive into the podcast topic, but let's do it.
I was hoping we were going to flesh this out longer, but yeah, let's go.
So what was Breakout Festival? Why were we there, and what did we do?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah.
I thought you were just saying that and then you were just going to talk.
No, that's the end of the podcast.
Well, thanks very much. J.Cross at...
Breakout Festival was the first ever Brighton metal festival, which was hosted not by a company or an organisation, but by a fella and his girlfriend who
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if they were a couple.
Oh, I thought they were a couple. Ooh.
I mean, they were definitely a couple of people, but I don't know if they were a couple.
That's a pretty big undertaking.
I just assumed that they were, but maybe it wasn't. I'm sure other people have said that, but maybe I misunderstood.
Maybe you've just, as the kids call it, maybe you've just shipped them.
That's...
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Shipped.
Okay. Yeah,
what does that mean?
Relationshipped.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like that. I don't like that.
Shipping.
I don't know.
I would imagine that there is at least one podcast listener somewhere that is shipping us in a sort of slash fiction way. Jay and Joe slash
in some sort of
the,
weird
are
anime.
I've always wondered. Did you read about that the One Direction weird fan fiction?
Well, that's where it comes. Well, that's not where it comes from, but that's why I know about it. One Direction shipping.
Larry
Stylington.
Larry Stylington, yeah.
I think we're letting on that we know too much about One Direction.
Well, this is great.
Did anyone else see on Facebook the other day that when Ella, Mark's other half, came home, she caught Mark dancing to One Direction?
I mean, I have no problem with that.
They got a couple of big tunes. You know, it was on in the kitchen, I was doing the washing up. I'm allowed to have a bit of a dance.
I pictured you playing it on like Nintendo Wii with like a nunchuck and just
dancing around. No, it wasn't like Dance Central or whatever. It was just,
Dance Revolution.
Happened to be on the radio when she walked in.
Which song is it?
One of them. I don't know.
Oh, nearly caught him out there, boys.
I want to say
that
one. I can't.
Is it the one that sounds like this? Doesn't sound like. Is a direct rip off of that Who song. Have you heard that one?
No.
My Generation.
No. Oh wait, yeah, no, sorry, My Generation by One Direction. No, there's a One Direction song. I think it's called Best Song Ever, and it's like, it literally starts like down, 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 but like one part is slightly slower than the rest. I don't know.
It's, you know, the longer we keep up this topic, the more listeners are dropping off.
Yeah, that's
okay.
True.
Sorry,
guitar enthusiasts and One Direction generally don't mix, which is why we're such a unique bunch, because we can appreciate. Sorry. Both.
I know the guy that played all the guitar on the One Direction film.
Really?
Yeah, he did all the guitar playing for the One Direction film.
Maybe we should get him on the podcast.
Managed to then buy himself a vintage 1964 Fender Showman.
Oh, nice. Sweet.
There's definitely matching cab.
I don't know if you, I mean, it is surprising, but there's probably quite a lot of money in One Direction.
Yeah, they were the bit highest earning pop stars last year, I think, in Britain.
More than Sir Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Wow. That's big. So, Breakout Festival.
Breakout Festival. So, yes, two people who happen to be of opposite gender, who may or may not be in some form of relationship, or we may or may not have shipped or couriered, at least in some way, put on a metal festival in Brighton at the Racecourse, which is this, you know, a big sort of horse racy place where they were able to put on two stages and have, you know, all the Portaloos and the food areas that you get at festivals, and it was cool. They got a ton of sort of metal bands and they, wow, that's very loud outside.
It was actually people coming back from Breakout Festival on their Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how metal it was.
It's pretty amazing though. Like,
really
to put on a festival.
Yeah,
just go. I'm gonna put on.
It was great.
Festival.
They did it. 2,500 people, or 2,400 people showed up for it. They sold out tickets wise, and absolutely brilliant sort of effort. And they managed to get some quality bands on there as well. Sort of, you know, within that genre, Funeral for a Friend, Skindred, In Me. It was, you know, they had some names on there, which is really cool.
And some bands that are like sort of up and coming, like that band, the 100.
Yeah,
that
the
we 100. Spoke to, who
made
subsequently, yeah, since like. Editing the videos, which are going up on the site, up on the YouTube channel as we speak, they're actually massive, and they were on like first or second on the main stage, I think.
Massive in popularity, not.
No, they're not like
huge guys.
There were a lot of tall people.
A
there,
week
though.
Is a long time in music.
Is it?
I don't know. Is that a saying?
I mean,
I think that's a saying.
Just quite insane.
Weirdly, they've got a bit of a kind of new metal vibe. So.
All
I mean,
of this has happened before.
15 years.
And
it's
all
also,
of this will happen
this
again.
This is something interesting that I kind of wanted to bring up about Breakout Festival, because, of course, I did Download, and when we did a podcast where we were talking about the guitars of Download, we were talking about how metal's moving in different directions and how, like, you know, John Five was there with his tellies, and we were seeing lots of Telecasters and lots of Gibsons and basically lots of passive pickups. And even when, you know, when we had the in-store session and we had like Ola England come in, and he's, you know, he has the most metal looking guitar you can imagine, but it's fitted with passive Seymour Duncans. This was almost, we kind of, I guess, then spoke about how metal is moving towards that sort of sound adjustment, and how EMGs and active stuff is almost a thing of the past, and kind of something I guess we would associate with new metal. Well, this festival was totally different, because it was all the guitars that you would expect, and it was totally, totally different from the guitars that I saw at Download Festival.
Yeah, I mean, from your footage from Download, everyone was playing like a Tele or just a standard Les Paul. And like you say, this couldn't have been any further from that, really. Like, so much ESP, Schecter, we saw a couple of Jacksons, and even the guitars that were like more traditional, Teles and Les Pauls and stuff, Germany had some mods done to them to make them kind of more metal, as it were.
Yeah.
So, of the... I mean, what were your kind of standout guitars, really? What were the ones that were kind of popular?
Well, I think from all the people that we interviewed at that festival, I think we saw more Fender Jim Root Teles than anything else.
Yeah,
we
got Fender.
Fender ones. Yeah, we got two in a row, actually. Both one black and then one white. Which were, I think, Fathoms and then the 100.
Yeah.
And the 100 have a Fender and a Jackson endorsement, which is why they hit those, but I don't know if Fathoms did.
I think that's one of the best guitars Fender make.
I think it's brilliant.
It must be the biggest selling artist signature.
Of recent times, must be.
In terms of what it sells today, I would still imagine that something like the Clapton probably still sells more than the Jim Root.
Do you?
Yeah.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Worldwide, I would say. Yeah.
But there's just something about those gym rooms.
Maybe. I don't think for us.
I think maybe not for us. I also think the Kurt Cobain stuff probably sold quicker, but it obviously hasn't had such a longer run.
Yeah.
But we definitely sold a lot of those very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the gym route is.
I mean,
you know,
just the overall playability. Just
yeah,
they feel so nice. They sound so good.
I think he's great. I think he has done a lot for guitar nerds. I think he's, you know, he's sort of made he's made the telly acceptable for a whole other sort of demographic. You know, people who traditionally, like, you know, guitarists who traditionally could only really get away with playing, you know, 10 years ago, if you turned up to a metal gig and you had a Telecaster, I think a lot of people would sort of laugh you off the stage. You know,
they throw their bandanas at you.
But now it's like, yeah, fine. Jim Root plays one. He's totally banging. Like.
I watched an early Slipknot video actually from like one of the first festival gigs, and he's playing an Ibanez RG, I think, for quite a lot of it.
Amazing.
So obviously, like, and I think it was just modded for like one pickup or something. But yeah, it's funny how it's like totally changed, and the people are going, yeah, the guys you wouldn't expect, you know, if you were taking stereotypes, going, yeah, seen the Jazzmaster, I want a Jazzmaster.
Yeah,
they're like
yeah.
into playing, like, you know, Slipknot is like a mixture of like, it's almost got like elements of like death metal and like speed metal in it, and those kind of dudes going, yeah, I want to play like a Jazzmaster. Yeah. So what?
Even the so I can't remember which band it was, but even the fellow who had a Baja Telly was there. He was like, I got this one because it's the most expensive thing I can afford, and I really like Jim Root, and he plays like black tellies and that black Jazzmaster. So I bought a Baja Telly because it's the closest thing I could get.
Do you think
really?
Though, yeah. like in terms of guitars, do you think that? So you say it download, and you had people playing like expensive Fenders and Les Pauls. Do you think it's because those got artists are a bit bigger and they just can afford loads more? Where maybe these guys were kind of defined maybe a little bit more budget, so they were going by.
I think no, actually, because a lot of the even the younger kids there had more expensive stuff, so like proper ESPs rather than LTDs.
Okay.
But I think there's definitely a shift in how you perceive what a top end guitar is. So kids there, I mean, they were loving. And when I say kids, you know, we're in our 30s, and they were ish.
The two of us who were there.
Yeah. And they were, I mean, a lot of them were early 20s.
And oh, my people.
You're not early 20s, Jacob. Stop kidding
Reaper,
yourself.
Except for the Reaper, who were a kid band.
They seemed about 16.
They were definitely younger than that. I reckon they were like 12, 13, and their guitarist played a Dave Mustaine.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The one with
the one of the Megadeth album covers on the front.
Yeah.
Can you remember what the Megadeth albums are called? I certainly can't.
No, I've no idea.
But it was one that had one of the kind of ridiculous graphics.
Not like the Gears of War one.
No, it wasn't Gears of War.
Age of Death.
Wasn't the one with the guy covered in bees either.
Oh, that's the best one.
Not the bees.
Not the bees. Yeah, I mean, he looked like so overjoyed to own that guitar. He was loving it. That video's not gone live yet, but it will do. He's just...
What guitar are you playing? This one!
And it was pretty massive on him because he was a young,
Rust in Peace.
Rust in Peace.
That was the one.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so most of the guys there were sort of like, I would say 18 to 21, something like that. And to them, it's all about ESP, you know, and ESP and Schecter, actually. And just so many people playing Eclipses.
Well, that's it. I think the Eclipse, quite specifically the EC1000, in that flat. Well, they call it vintage black, but it's kind of like a satin black.
Yeah.
We must have seen that
three or four times.
Yeah.
On a quite weird side note, actually, talking of ESP and talking of Eclipses, someone emailed me who was interested in parting with their original ESP Eclipse when they did them as a telly shape.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The first run ESPs were shaped like a telly.
And they were called the Eclipse?
And they were called the Eclipse, yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
Are we going to take that in?
I don't know. But I have a Google. It's pretty bonkers, because I just thought we were talking about tellies.
Yeah.
And ESP. And
how weird. So anyway, yeah, there was just a lot of love for that, and it was really different from what we saw. And coincidentally, the older guys, so, you know, for example, Mikey from Skindred, who plays that telly that's quite heavily customised, and the guy from... what was the French band? Deadly Circus Fire.
Yeah, Deadly Circus Fire. You're leaning on to a later topic, but we can talk about that now. Is the most customised guitars?
Well, I wasn't even going to say that. I was going to say that they were a bit older and they picked more traditional guitars, because each had a Les Paul studio, and Mikey obviously had a telly. Were there... there were some other older fellas as well, weren't there? So the Sirens...
Sirens in the Delta.
They had more traditional guitars as well. So he had that SGX...
That's right, yeah.
He had one of the Beach series.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. He'd had it refinished in kind of a TV yellow.
No, that's the original finish.
Oh, was it?
But he'd had a headstock break, which is why the neck looked a bit weird. But so I was reading about them today, because I was editing that video today. The SG, or they called it the Summer Beach series. So the SGX, I think, was a guitar that was like, they wanted to focus it on metal. It's a SG with a single bridge pickup. The traditional ones you see in like a black with a black perloid scratch plate, just one bridge pickup, and they're like a proper metal guitar, because they're a single bridge pickup. And then I think Gibson was like, do you know what would be the exact opposite of this? Summer Beach. So they did the Summer Beach series, which are the SGX in Daphne Blue, Shell Pink, and TV Yellow. And they are so rare, and they are awesome. And he had one of those. And they had another guitarist, didn't they, who had a similar...
Yeah, the other guitarist, I think, was playing a Les Paul.
Yeah.
An old standard.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it was just a Les Paul standard. Yeah, totally. So there definitely did seem to be a bit of a divide. And I think those sort of slightly older guys probably wouldn't... Even though they were playing metal, they probably wouldn't go for an ESP. Whereas for the younger kiddies, it was just like, yeah, obviously we're going to be playing an Eclipse or Horizon, you know. Yeah, so anyway, let's move on to... We've talked about a bit there, the kind of most customised guitars, because that was one of the questions that we were asking.
Yeah.
What have people been doing, really, to their guitars?
Well, there were actually relatively few, far fewer, I think, customisations than we expected, which I think was kind of a testament to things like the Eclipse, just how... and the Jim Root, just how much they've hit the nail on the head with those guitars. I mean, the most common thing I think we saw were pickup changes, which is an obvious one. And I think kind of the most popular pickups I think we saw were obviously EMGs. The 81-85 combo is quite popular, but there were a few. What's the other combo?
60-81-60.
What's the difference on those, Matt?
I think the 60s are a slightly different output. I think that's the main thing with all those EMGs.
The 60 is what's in the neck. Wait, no, 85
is in the bridge.
No, 81's the bridge.
Oh, is it?
81-85 is the traditional, that's the Zakk Wylde set, is that right?
81-60 is the... 81-60 is what's in... Is it in the Jim Root telly?
It's definitely in the Jim Root Jazz.
I'll look it up. It's definitely in the Jim Root Jazz. And the 60, I think, is just a bit... I don't want to use... Not darker, that's not quite the right word, but like a bit more...
Is it a bit more traditional? That's how I've always...
When you see
guitars that have got that combination in, that's how I always kind of picture it, is that the neck pickup is your kind of go-to pickup if you kind of don't want to sound particularly like you've got an EMG in
the neck.
I think
it's more like an active path, in a sense.
Exactly. A bit more traditional.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a lot of those changes, and also the other...
Oh, that's a 60 in the neck of the telly as well. Sorry, my mistake.
And the other pickups that we actually saw from a few people were Bare Knuckles, obviously.
They just own the market now.
And it was Black Alps, and the people doing that were the people playing Extended Range. Both the 7-string players, I think, we saw
Duncan Black Alps.
Was there only two Extended Range guitarists you spoke to then?
I think it was about that. And then there was a set of Duncan design versions of the Black Alps in the guy from Chasing Dragons, Schecter.
It's just strange that, you know, we talk about how with when you're at Download, you know, it's a lot more traditional than you'd expect. And then you go to somewhere like this and we're saying, well, no, you know, it's a lot more sort of stereotypical metal. But yet none of them are playing...
There was no extended range. No one was playing in standard tuning at all.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but whilst there were a lot of six strings, we had, like, for example, that six string, there was a guy playing a six string who used baritone strings and played in drop G sharp.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So low. that kind of surprised me, actually, because I was expecting
C. Because I asked a lot of people what they were dropping to, and drop A.
G sharp, so you're going down another tone across the board from that.
Yeah.
And that's a tone down from.
A half step down.
But then that's another tone down from baritone.
Yeah. So the thing that surprised me is that, you know, we're kind of, all the new product that we see and from all the manufacturers, it's like, yeah, sevens, eights, nines, this is what's happening right now. And actually, when you get out in front of these bands, and again, a lot of them were super young, exactly the kind of target demographic for that, the guys who are actually taking this stuff to the stage, they're not playing those guitars, they're playing six strings and they're adjusting.
They're still doing what, like, so, like, for me, when you think of extended range, when I think of extended range, I still think of Korn. You know, and back in whenever that first record came out, I guess it was like 94 or something, they were playing in drop A, but on six strings, you know, way before they had their signatures.
Yeah.
And I guess all they've done is, drop G sharp is only a half step down from what Korn were doing nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that outlandish.
But then, mate, I guess that kind of opens up the question, and something this can go out to the Facebook group. Are the people that are buying 7, 8s and 9s at the moment people
metals,
who are... Are they like bedroom guitarists? And is it that people who are actually going out and gigging are using 6s and changing the tuning?
Or the other thing is, are the... You know, in Animals as Leaders, you know, who are, again are like, I guess... I mean, I'm sure that they... This is not a tag they'd like, but I guess to a certain degree are sort of like the modern day Korn in the term, you know, and they're the, like, the front runners of the sort of
extended range,
Meshuggah, I guess.
I mean Meshuggah, you know, pretty much they're the, to me, still one of the best bands who use that.
because the
main guitarist, his biggest influence in terms of guitar playing is Alan Holdsworth, who is like the kind of the most ridiculous jazz fusion guitarist out there, and a lot of his tones come from that. And I think rather than, like with Meshuggah, rather than going super heavy, they're like, we want this, because their sound...
That was what I was going to say, is the extended range, has it sort of transcended the fact that it's not just like, right, there's another string there, I can go lower, I can play heavier. Is it now more for like jazzers and for
certainly Animals as Leaders would fall into that, and
absolutely,
they sacrificed
up,
a bass player to make those eight strings work.
We were looking at Tosin Abasi and we were reading that interview with him earlier. He's only been playing guitar for 5 years.
That
can't be true. No.
That's what I thought, but then that was what
Premier Guitar had printed.
No, that must be a misprint. He can't have only been playing 5 years.
I don't really know the stuff well enough to know, but I mean, I assume that he's like a virtuoso guitarist.
He is ridiculous.
That sort of quote unquote cheap Tosin model is in stock now, and it looks so good.
I've not seen it yet.
It looks so good.
Is it anywhere? Does it look similar to the expensive,
one? Yes, it does. But
it doesn't have that quilt top. Yeah, it's a plain colour.
Yeah, so it's white with, you know, it's like stripped back, but it's the same pickups.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow. What sort of money is it?
900 quid.
Wow. Compared to $3,500.
Yeah, for the custom shop one, yeah.
Blimey. Should we talk about amps? Because another thing that surprised me at Breakout, it was pretty much across the board Black Star.
It was. Black Star were... Yeah, they basically owned that festival.
Yeah, Black Star and... I mean, Orange Action...
I'm assuming there was no, like... product support for Backline, or was there were companies
Do you know what Orange did it, and actually on the
Orange
day
Orange always do
yeah Orange love do it, doing yeah. festivals and stuff. So pretty much across the board all the bands used the Backline that was provided, which was Orange stuff, and actually talking to people at the gigs that were playing, a lot of them still use Orange cabs in their day to day, and they're you know, big fans of Orange, but just Black Star heads, just everyone was using like HT series stuff. And I kind of, because we've only just started doing it, I don't really know enough about it. But like, what are the big metal Black Star heads?
Well, they do the, so you've got the HT series, the HT Studio 20, 40, 60, 62x12, and then they do the 100.
I think that's what HT100 seems to be the one.
A lot of the metalers also use the Series 100, which is slightly different, and you've got a lot more tonal control. So they imagine the HT100 being like a head version, a 100-watt head version of a Hot Rod Deluxe.
Okay.
So, you know, two channels, quite a simple setup. The Series 1 is like, I think, three channels.
Yeah.
But like so much, almost like a boogie.
Okay.
Almost like a, you know, Black Star's version of a boogie. And they, and for metal-wise, they're a lot more extreme. I'm just going to pull it up here. Let's have a look. Yeah, so the Series 100 head. When you think about the price, they're like, well, I mean, $899.
Yeah, $899.
If you're using the dual rec as a benchmark.
I mean, that's significantly cheaper.
Whenever you use a dual rec as a benchmark, though, anything's going
to
be cheaper.
I need to get that. And actually, the dual rec was what we were seeing from the slightly bigger bands as well.
But again,
Like Funeral for a Friend and Skindred.
Skindred. Deadly Circus Fire were using Mesa Boogie, and I can't remember who else. There were a few.
I think, again, it was more skewed to the kind of older guys that perhaps, you know, grew up.
That's right.
You know, seeing bands in the early 2000s when people, you know, everything was dual rectifier and triple rectifier, well, and they're buying that sort of thing. Whereas, again, the new bands, the young guys, just don't have any kind of attachment to, you know, that stuff. You don't have attachment to Marshall or don't have attachment to Boogie. And they just want to play stuff that they see the bands that they like playing, and it's like Black Star, you know.
Yeah, and they do a 200-watt head.
Wow.
They do a Series 200, which is KT88, so huge,
really?
Huge, boomy and bassy.
And so like SVT classic valve, essentially.
There was six modes. On the 200-watt one?
Yeah. That's mental.
I've not seen one of those. Have we got it in?
We haven't got one.
Let's get one.
We haven't got one of the two, but we do have one of the hundreds.
Yeah.
But they are great for that. They pretty much have an amp that I suppose they've had time to think about their product line, because they're a relatively new company. What, 7 years, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Blackstar, which isn't a long time.
No.
Considering, like, how much you see them in places, like, say, at this festival. And I think they've kind of sat back and gone, well, you know, Fender do X, Y, and Z, and Boogie do that. And they've kind of sat nicely in the middle with stuff that works and sounds good and is versatile, and they're just great products.
The thing that struck me, and we've talked about it a lot, is the move away from big, loud amps. And I wonder if that's because people have moved away from big, loud amps on Fender, Marshall, you know, the brands that we're used to seeing. You know, DSL 100 used to be a huge selling amp. We don't sell quite so many of those now. But all the kids that we talked to were like, yeah, Blackstar, yeah, we've got 100-watt heads. And I wonder whether the market's just kind of shifted that way a little bit.
I think so, and I think probably maybe on the behalf of Blackstar themselves, I think they've probably gone, there's obviously a gap in the market here, and they've really pushed their market in, and they've really gone, you know, why don't you use our stuff? And
yeah.
I think they've just been a lot more open with people and gone, look, use our stuff. Because to break into a market where companies like Marshall have dominated it for 40, 50 years, and to come out and be like, we're a new amp brand, and not a new amp brand that's boutique expensive.
Yeah.
A new amp brand where everything is manufactured overseas, and, you know, it's still good quality, but it's like, yeah, we're an amp brand where our amps are £800 rather than, oh yeah, they're made in our shed and we charge $3,000.
Yeah.
Because kids aren't going to relate to that, because, you know, they're not going to go, well, I'm never going to be able to afford it. Whereas if someone hands them a Blackstar and says, why don't you use this on tour?
Which is exactly why I think people are moving away from the Mesa thing. There is no association, and the only association with it is that
Boogie have gone, we need to do mini heads.
Yeah.
Because we can do a mini head that costs £1,000. But it covers all the bases.
Really
that, but it's really good.
Yeah.
There was one other amp brand that we saw a lot of, and I want to see if you boys can. Do you know what it was? What do you think?
Are we talking guitar amps?
Yeah, there was another guitar amp brand that featured there quite a lot.
Ironheart, Laney.
Surprisingly, not one. There was one Ironheart there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
PV.
6505? Yeah, actually loads of 65. I probably should have mentioned that on this list.
We didn't
write that down. But yeah, plenty of 6505s. Obviously, I think a real staple good head. In fact, I think both the Jim Root guitars were going into PV 6505s.
I think pretty much, I mean, apart from a couple, pretty much everything that wasn't Black Star was 6505.
Yeah. Right. But there was another amp brand that featured there. Just
the way you're smirking is weird. Well, I mean,
Roland? It wasn't Roland.
Line six. About line six. Yeah.
A couple of people had line six heads.
What ones?
HD100s.
Spider valve HD100.
Okay.
So those spider valve ones, Bogner designed.
Well, this is the conversation
that
we had.
Actually, that's exactly what we were talking about. Yeah. So there's lots of people using that sort of thing so that they can get all their effects dealt with on the ramp. Like, I mean, the people that did play those really shortened our interview conversation because the third part of it was us asking about pedals, and of course
they were just like, it's got one and it's got two, then it's got three, then it's got four on it, and I push one of those and it does one of four different sounds. It's amazing. In terms of effects, again, Black Star was pretty prominent, wasn't it? The HT dual series pedals.
Wow.
You know, people were using them just push the front end of their amps pretty much.
And Tube Screamers.
Tube Screamers as well. We've talked about them as a kind of like secret metal pedal, really.
TS9.
Yeah, the TS9. A lot of people using them to perhaps drive the front end.
I've been this week I've been writing more of those the sound alike things that we do on our website where we list products that famous artists have used, and I've been doing a few sort of big metal players, and I think a TS9 has been in nearly all of them.
Yeah, like I'm saying, it's like a
Jim
secret
Root has one.
It's a secret metal pedal.
Do you know what else Jim Root uses? What? Digitech Synthwar.
Yeah, I put that on the list.
Does he really?
A lot of the really early the first Slipknot record, a lot of there's some weird guitar sounds that are all happening.
John Five has one of the Electro-Harmonix bass microsynths.
I'm telling you, get a bass synth for guitar. That's the guitar versions just sound really flimsy in comparison. The bass version is definitely the way to go.
I reckon they're definitely going to be going for a few hundred pounds in
the bass synth. I'm telling you, best pedal, such a good pedal,
legendary pedal of the future.
Definitely. But yeah, so a bit of Blackstar and TS9's pretty much across the board. Someone mentioned the HT modulation, which is one that
it's like a valve-driven multi-effects, isn't
it? And almost, I mean, something that was released this week, which we might not have time to talk about today, is the Strymon Deco, which is that tape modulator delay thing. But the HT modulation actually does a similar thing, because you can drive the front end, get a bit of tape warble off the modulation patches. And I guess they're a slightly cheap alternative to what the Deco is going to be?
Well, I mean, the Deco is going to be nearly £300.
Yep.
And you are limited in the sense that you can't switch it to a modulation preset type. But you are effectively changing the way two tape decks are working on the Deco. We'll go into it.
We'll talk about the Deco.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that would definitely... It's those little pedals like that have got several different modulations on have been really popular, like Mua do one, and I think it's good because, to be honest, a lot of the time, especially even for me, someone who loves pedals, I really love pedals.
Do you love pedals?
But you know, do you necessarily want to? I never really use flanger, so you want to have one that's got a flanger and a chorus in it and a phaser. You're like, just one of those. Save space, save room for another more useful pedal.
Are we talking about real estate again?
It's like always about real estate.
Like a fifth delay.
It's almost too real estate.
Someone who was I talking to today? I was talking to a friend of mine who plays a bit of guitar, but like is mainly a drummer. His band. He played in this band called Crows and Ra, which is named after this weird town in Cornwall. And they're like a kind of like post-hardcore-y type band, but they all used to be in like punk bands and like sort of like ratty screamo bands, and so they always used to plug straight in. And now since they're doing this kind of like post-hardcore type band, the guitarist has been getting more and more pedals. And Mikey, my friend, was saying to me today, he was like, "Yeah, it's weird. Like Greg's pedal board, like it's bigger than his guitar case. Like, can you believe that?" And I'm like,
He's only got one pedal board.
He's got four delays, and one of the delays he only uses in one bar of one song. And I'm like, wow, I was just sort of saving him. I was like, yeah, wow, that's. And I was just like, yeah, I mean,
I've got delays that don't even turn on. They're just there. They just on the pedal board.
Just leave it in the loop.
Yeah, I've got that one there. Just don't even know what that one does anymore. Just it's there.
But But yeah, no,
the dusty end of the pedal board. But it's the, you know, I must admit that sometimes I've definitely been and had pedal boards where, you know, where they always say, oh, the dusty end of the fretboard. Yeah, don't go past the 7th fret if you're a session bass player and things like that. Honestly, with massive pedal boards, sometimes...
Don't go past the 5th.
Don't go past the 1st. Just E and F.
Yeah, that's all I need.
But yeah, you find that you've got this massive pedal board, and actually the only ones that you stomp on the most are like the overdrive and like one delay.
Yeah.
That does one
sound. So the rest of them are actually a little bit...
They're just there.
A bit dusty.
A little bit dusty, yeah.
I remember when your pedal board had two optical... synth robot oscillators.
Oh yeah, had that
on there.
Still
oh,
got
yeah.
them.
That
still
was
still got them.
You have two of them.
I've got two. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna work out a way. I'm gonna work out a way at some point that I can.
You can do a gig.
No, that's never gonna. I've got three complete pedal boards now. Three, a mini, a pedal train mini, a pedal train junior, and a pedal train three.
Have they all got a tuner on?
The mini does not.
Okay.
Who needs it?
Have you got? Have you got a pitch clip for that? You got a Korg pitch clip?
No, because I'll patch that one into my... I'll take my big pedal board. Right, it's got okay, just for the tuner. I won't step on the rest. just bug into the tuner and then come out of the tuner into the other board.
Seems a little unnecessary. Now, right. Joe, just to keep you satisfied, we should talk about the bass stuff that we saw. We didn't see as many bass players as we did guitarists.
Well, I don't think we tried to book as many bass players as we did guitarists. They're just the gear is not as interesting, and certainly not in metal, I don't think.
I guess there was only really one kind of notable player to talk about, and I think that's
the only one I actually wanted to go to this whole thing for, the only person I wanted to interview, and
you had
probably
to leave.
Kind of the only band that I wanted to see, and I had to leave before they played, and
I got to interview
you
him.
Got to interview him and not me.
Who
Brilliant.
Is this?
So his name is Richard
Boucher.
Boucher, I think it is, from Funeral for a Friend.
Oh, okay.
He's the bass player. He brought with him his custom-made Warwick. And told me quite a few amazing things about Warwick that I didn't know.
Yeah, you should definitely tell this story.
He's got a custom-made streamer, which he designed himself, which is a Swamp Ash back.
For all the snappy sort for when he digs in.
A Purple Heart centre.
Oh,
and a Bubinga top. So it's a three-piece...
It's like a Neapolitan bass.
Exactly, yeah.
And it looks it from the side as well. It's so good.
And then it's a through-neck.
Through-neck.
Through-neck, and which I assume is Bubinga and...
With the neck with Swampash on the back. The whole neck on the back is Swampash.
Didn't it have stripes down through it?
Even in the neck? I don't know, you saw it closer than me.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, it'll be one of that combination. So it looks amazing. MEC pickups in there, which are the standard Warwick. I think he's got like Boosh on the... 24th fret, I think it is.
Yeah, it's got 24 frets.
And I mean, it's amazing bass.
Five string.
Yeah, five string. But the cool thing about it, and he was telling me that he went over to firstly design it, but also to go to the Warwick like factory tour. The Warwick factory is the only carbon neutral guitar manufacturing plant in the world.
What? Wow. It's completely carbon neutral.
Which is why he plays Warwick, which is pretty cool.
Really?
So. Yeah. Wow. In the Warwick factory, there's like pipes of air that blast down the whole time. So all the dust and everything from manufacturing has to sit at floor level. It then gets swept up automatically and put back into a furnace that generates all of the electricity for the plant.
They also have solar power there.
And yes,
he was saying it's so weird because of course there's no sawdust on the floor, no one's having to wear any facial apparatus or anything to work
because it's all just blown like directly down and then away.
Wow, weird.
Mental, isn't it? What a fantastic thing for a company to do to try and
that's
achieve.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
When you've got, you know, most companies, you know, big companies, you know, finish guitars in nitrocellulose, which is highly toxic.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
It was really interesting hearing from him, like the process of it. And he plays the Hellborg amp system.
That's right, he plays Warwick Hellborg amps, which we've kind of only actually recently started listing.
Yeah. I can see a bit of a resurgence coming in Warwick, actually. We've always been a dealer, but we've never really done a huge amount of the high-end stuff, or not certainly for the last few years.
It was what he was saying about the Hellborg stuff was really interesting as well. How he was saying, certainly for when he has to play kind of fast, complicated lines, he was finding that sort of Ampeggy valve tone was just a little bit too slow.
A bit too much sag.
Yeah, in the sound, which is why he plays the Hellborg, the completely digital amps. And it's kind of been I guess a little while, certainly on the bass front, that we've heard positivity towards digital amps as opposed to...
I say it all the time, I love Mark Bass.
Absolutely no one cares about what you think.
I mean, that could be a point. Wow, I guess I'll just end the podcast right now.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, cheers.
That was the last one.
See you never. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so he likes that kind of fast attack, which you don't get off you don't get off an Ampeg. And again, that's kind of how his bass was built as well, but that kind of tight, snappy Swamp Ash, but with a bit of the depth that you get off the Bubinga top. So yeah, very interesting indeed. We saw a couple of other basses. There was a Jackson, I think, and a...
Yeah, the 100 were using one of the Jackson...
Oh, because they just got an endorsement.
Yeah, that's right.
And the bass player was like, I've only been playing bass like 5 months or something.
Yeah. He's 10 months, yeah, he said. All right, this is going to be a short interview, buddy.
But I watched some of their stuff today, and he's a totally fine bass player. That'll do, you know. That's all you need, 5 months. I'm sure I'd done 100 gigs by the time I've been playing for 5 months. Just punk or metal, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a really nice 70s P bass, actually.
Yeah, a bit of a refin kind of job, a bit of a kind of mishmash, but actually...
It was good. It had all the proper, like, all the mods that you see on 70s P basses, so like a Leo quad bridge and a brass nut.
Yeah.
And I think changed the pickups out for some
maybe?
Duncan's SPB1s.
Yep, the vintage
excellent
style.
Excellent choice, yeah, when you've got sort of that 70s wood.
Yeah, so, it's the kind of P bass that you'd want to pick up for significantly less than a mint one would cost you, but you'd still really want to play it, you know.
Yeah.
I love that. Should we take some questions?
Yes.
As always, questions can be posted in the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. I listened back to the podcast last week and I got that completely wrong a few times. It's not Guitar Nerds, it's Guitar Nerds Group. And Guitar Nerds takes you to some weird... Swedish group, I want to say. So yeah, make sure it's facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. You can post your questions and we will answer them thusly.
We will answer them maybe. Is that what you meant?
Thusly.
Maybe. We will answer them maybe.
First up, Richard says, any advice or recommendations on a 100 watt gigging amp for £300 ish? Are we running a Boss ME80 in front, so does not need any built-in modelling / effects, etc.? Matt Knight.
He is a lovely chap, by the way. I'll put that out there.
Richard?
I sold him a Wolfgang, one of those ones we're doing on a deal.
Oh, yeah?
And, yeah. Amazing.
Now he needs an amp to go with it.
Yeah.
What are we looking at?
PV.
Well, there was a little bit of... Yeah, there was PV, but actually the one good suggestion which came from someone else on the group, that's what I love about the group, that they kind of
do our job for us.
We don't have to do any work.
James suggested on the group... Orange CR120.
God damn it, James. That was going to be my suggestion.
We would have just spent this talking about the valve king
Think we should do some sort of point system where everyone scores points for the good answers they give, and then we'll give a prize away.
Yeah, we can send out
honestly,
gold stars the
they got there before I did, and I was saying, yeah, perfect. Sounds like a valve amp.
Yeah.
It's super loud.
Yeah.
And an ME80 will sound wicked in front of you.
Yeah. No, and CR120.
More than a valve king? More than the PV valve king?
Yeah, I think so.
PV valve king's actually all valve, though.
Yeah.
But if you got an ME80, you probably want something that... I mean, I'd go for the orange. I just think they're brilliant for the money.
I just really love the PV valve king.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good option. Yeah. It's a good option, but...
Valve king...
Combo.
20 combo, are you talking about?
No, Valve King.
I thought the 100 watt head.
Yeah, but then you've got to buy a cab.
You've got a cab. Can you get that in the budget?
Oh, are you talking combo? Oh, I thought
you were talking... Well, no, but he wants a gigging amp for £300-ish.
Oh, in that case, you would... Damn well, it. Okay, I thought it was just amp. I thought it was just head.
Okay, what's the CR120 combo coming?
The combo is like 450.
But you could go for the 60, and they're still really loud.
The 60's 349,
and super loud.
And we'll do them a deal, so... 300-ish.
Definitely, definitely. Any other suggestions before we move on?
I mean, I would say that...
Does Blackstar do anything around that sort of dosh?
Dosh?
I mean, I was going to suggest...
Like you say.
Oh, I think I often use the word dosh.
He does say dosh a lot.
Does he?
Along with bosh, mosh.
Does he dish out the dosh?
He does, often.
Nosh.
Often. I'm just like...
What was that? No one can see that.
Joe Brandon making it rain daily.
But yeah, just quickly, Blackstar. I was going to suggest the ID dirty TVP, but it's got loads of effects on it, and you've already got an ME80, so there was no need.
There we go. Phil says, anyone got strong views, even, on the best headphones for guitar practice? Comfort and sound quality at a reasonable price. Just knack at my Beyerdynamic DT100s. Before just buying some, I thought I'd see what modern options there are.
I don't know anything about headphones.
Well, I use RH300s.
The Roland ones?
The Roland ones for recording, and they're pretty good. But Beyerdynamic ones have been...
Keep going. Beyerdynamic ones have been...
I was just waiting for
Jay to come up with some options.
Yeah. But no, Beyerdynamic ones have always been solid ones. But I don't know, really, because I don't practice with headphones that much, so... Definitely like over-the-ear ones, but I think Roland ones would be fine without spending loads of money.
I'm just going to take these headphones off because these ones have always been really good and I can't remember what they are. Hang on. Audio-Technica ATHM40s have always served me really nicely. I use them for mixing and I use them for guitar practice and stuff.
I think you need to be careful. Don't go for a pair of headphones that's designed for like dance production, like Tiesto, the Tiesto ones, something like that, because they're like super bass heavy and
not great for guitar practice. No. I mean, I just pretty much every studio I go into, DT100s are still there, so I think that seems to be a kind of common. Also, the Shure headphones, I can't remember any model numbers off the top of my head, but are supposed to be really good.
Yeah,
definitely worth looking into.
You know, it's not, you know, it's more pro audio.
Yeah, but, you know, for guitar practice, like I say, I think the Audio-Technicas that I use have always been a...
But I think cheap and cheerful, I think those RH300s are like £100.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, good middle of the road ones.
Definitely. Mark says, does anyone have any experience with humbucking P90s? I know Fraylin makes one and Seymour Duncan Custom Shop makes one. I want to know if they sound like quiet P90s or if they sound like humbuckers.
Sidewinder. Gibson Sidewinders, right?
I don't know the answer to this question.
Gibson Sidewinders.
That's unusual.
Yes.
Gibson Sidewinders. Check it out on the Melody Makers. I'm sure they are...
They're humbucking P90s.
They sound good as well, which
they
was always the problem.
Good.
I remember the first one, the P100.
Was that the one they put in the early Billy Joes?
The first Billy Joes.
That's wicked.
No.
P90H was what was in the first...
No.
Billy Joes.
No. P100 was in the first Billy Joes, and they didn't sound very good. And then they changed it to the P90H, which sounded a lot better.
Right,
and the Sidewinders sound even better.
Don't look for Sidewinder, because all it does is bring up the Venom Sidewinder.
Sidewinder cables. Are they available separately, the Sidewinder pickups?
At the moment, I don't think they are.
Okay.
But that's the best experience we've got with it. It's always difficult with pickups, because...
Depends on the guitar that you're
putting them in. And, you know, you can't just pick up and put it to your ear and go, oh, yeah, that's meaty sounding. But, yeah, I would say, actually, it still maintains a lot of the P90 tone, but you do just get a little bit more silence from...
Yep, definitely, definitely.
From that. But, yeah, I suppose maybe they're probably a little bit beefier sounding.
The problem with those first ones on the Billy Joe, the P100, were that they sounded too chunky. They didn't have the snap of a P90.
Yeah.
Whereas I think technology has moved on a little bit since then. And I've not got any experience with the Seymour Duncan one, but I would assume that Seymour Duncan know what they're doing. And it probably sounds like a P90, but with hum cancelling.
Yeah.
It's kind of in the same way that like a hum cancelling Strat pickup kind of doesn't sound like a Strat pickup 100%, but it's a, you know, it's a good approximation of it.
It is weird, because when you hear a totally silent single coil, you're like,
this is weird. There should
be some like the noiseless pickups, like they have to have more output, I think, to be noiseless.
Yeah.
So they can be a little bit on not the harsh side, but they can be so overly stratty that's then a bit.
They sometimes sound a bit sterile,
like clinical, I suppose.
I mean, I guess sterile. The
great for a really for a workhorse kind of guitar, if you want something that covers loads of styles, but not if you're going, oh yeah, I want that real 50s tone, you wouldn't necessarily put noiseless pickups.
I guess this is the other kind of stealth answer to that question is, do you need a noiseless pickup? Because Jimi Hendrix didn't need one, and you know, all the people that have played, you know, P90 guitars have never really needed one.
I think that's the thing is I'm totally that class of a bedroom guitarist, and you do sometimes just, you hear more of it.
Yeah.
I think if you're gigging a lot, you're just going out there and you're playing, where as fellas like me who have got three pedal boards and four amps sit there going, there's some hum coming from somewhere, and you put the guitar down after playing one chord, and an hour later you found out what that hum is, and then you go, I can't bother playing anymore.
Just describe every night around yours.
That's not true. Is what you do is you like spend an hour finding the hum, and you put it down and you go, that was wicked.
I'll
put the hum through a delay, and then I put a pitch shifter on it, and then I mixed it in with a random tone generator.
So
I mean, that would be my kind of answer, is yes, there are some available, but I mean, if you're going out gigging, actually you probably don't really need one. If you are running a pedal board setup or a big pedal board setup, again, there's probably more noise coming from the fact that you've got pedals plugged in than the pickup itself. So yes, do we need one? Let's move on. I thought there was like more to that, but there wasn't. Stuart says, what bass would you recommend an experienced guitar player to buy that hasn't played much bass? Simply for someone that wants to replace software plugins like Spectrasonic's Trillion Reel Recording. Also an instrument that's suitable for a variety of styles like rock, blues, country, metal, etc. No budget mentioned.
I did answer this on the group itself, but I thought it was a good idea for us to talk about this question so we could all talk about it.
I can actually tell you the answer. I sold him a vintage modified PJ.
There we go. But yeah, I mean, that would have been one of my.
I would always automatically get a short scales for guitar players.
Yeah, good shout.
And I think we've spoken about it before, and I think it's what I suggested on the group. But the new short scale jazz bass. Is it short scale jazz bass?
It's just a jazz.
Precision pickup and a jazz
pickup. That's what I was thinking.
So you get the PJ, which I think is, if you want something that does a lot of styles, I think the PJ is the pickup configuration you need.
Do you know what else I would point you? If you've got a bit more money to spend, the Rascal, which is my favourite bass of this year so far, it will do a good range of styles. It's almost like a Strat bass, essentially, because it's got, you know, like out of phase positions, and it can do kind of some more weird stuff. 5-way pickup selector with an S1 switch as well. Yeah, I really like the Rascal, but it is more money. It's £680 or something.
What about Bass 6 though? If you're already a guitar player,
I think it's not a bad idea. I just think there are things that the Bass 6 doesn't do.
It just doesn't sound like a bass to me. It sounds like a Bass 6, and if you're trying to replace, you know, like bass plugins to do recording, you want it to sound like a bass, and a Bass 6 doesn't sound like a bass. It sounds its own beast, as you well know.
I think they're great, and actually a really useful thing for guitarists to have, the Bass 6. But if you specifically say, you know, if you were looking for your own sound for bass, and you were a guitarist who wanted to lay that stuff down, then Bass 6 would be great. But if you're looking for something that's going to sound like bass's sound, maybe not.
Actually, I mean, talking about Bass 6, someone did put a video on the Facebook group of someone, I think it was like 1969, of someone playing a Bass 6. And it's like a wicked fuzz pedal, and it just sounded amazing.
I just think they're an instrument in their own right, really. You don't play them like a guitar or a bass. It's that weird.
I don't know, I play mine like a guitar.
But yeah, but you're weird.
But I suppose you can't really tell when you're running it through 10 fuzz pedals.
And an octave up, so it just sounds like a guitar anyway.
Yeah, this bass is a bit too low. Better put it through an octave up. Give it more of that guitar tone.
I was speaking to the bass player in a band called Beggar the other day, and he's a guitarist first. He's their singer.
Okay,
it's like a screamo band, excellent screamo vocal. But he was he's terrible at. He's a very good bass player, but he thinks he's terrible at it. His right hand technique is so geared towards guitar. Like, his hand was all sort of cut up by the end of it, because he has that sort of, you know, bass player sort of.
He plays like me, basically.
Yeah, just a really tight right hand, whereas bass players can kind of swing their hands at a bass and hit everything okay, but he just mashes up his hand because of how he's used to doing it. And so I'd suggested a Bass 6. I think he's going to pick one up. I think it's a great solution for.
Do you know what I've really wanted? And they don't make them anymore, but I remember a guy who used to work at the shop bought one, and he made it sound great. Was the Broncos.
Oh yeah, actually, you definitely. The Bronco, they're not much money at all, and they are really good fun.
And they did a Hello Kitty one. Well, Hello Kitty's friend, Bats
Maru.
Oh man, I want one of them.
A penguin.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I really want one of them.
Yeah, they go for silly money on eBay.
I know.
Crazy money. We need to talk about your new guitar in a sec.
We'll do that at the end. Yeah, we'll also talk about the amp that I should have run it through before I left the shop. Why didn't I plug it into that?
The amp that I bought.
No, not that one.
Another one. So Matt says, I've got a question for the team and for the nerds. I want to cover some bass lines with my guitar. What pedal is best for this? In a nutshell, I need an octave down, good tracking of single notes. Anyone got any experience of this? Thanks.
Micropog.
Yeah, micropog. Yeah,
pretty much across the board. There's nothing else really that will do it.
There's nothing that tracks that well. Yeah.
No.
Pog 2.
I mean, the thing is that you've got things like the new... If you're not bothered about like a whammy function, you've got the new... The drop.
Oh, the drop, yeah.
But the problem is that it sounds just like the end. It's just the brain from a whammy, and those whammies have that great kind of digital weirdness to them.
Yeah.
But the POG has, or the micropog has, it just sounds like a bass. I think if you EQ it slightly, especially recording, I think you'd find it tough to.
Yeah.
Especially if you were a guitar, because you would play it like. You're playing a guitar, and I think you can definitely tell the difference between a guitarist playing a bass and a bass player playing bass, like we were just saying.
OC3?
They don't track as well.
This is what you say. I use an OC3 for an octave below on my bass sound.
Yeah, I mean, I just think having compared
the two...
Yeah, but that's
really subby, though.
True.
Comparing the two, I think if you want detailed tracking, you know, that... follows exactly what you're playing. The micropog is the only,
because if with the micropog, if you turn the normal down, the octave up down, and just turn the octave down all the way up, Jay's mind.
Jay's brain is just broken.
I mean, OC2 will do that really well. Scott Devine, the guy who does all those bass,
the bass videos. Scott, yeah, bass videos. Lessons.
I've got an OC2, and they do sound great.
He has an OC2 and a DS1 that he exclusively uses together, and he has the OC2 set, so it just has the octave below.
What they're really good for is synthy sounds.
Yeah.
And that's what the OC3 is great for.
Yeah.
But
you've got that drive function on it, like a drive octave.
Yeah.
So let's move on. So this is from David. This one actually came in via email, podcast@gak.co.uk. My son and I have recently started learning electric guitar. I purchased guitars for both of us just from eBay. They were both cheap and the Strat is fine, whereas the Les Paul has a slightly twisted neck. And he sent a picture that shows that. I mean, you can never really tell just by looking down the neck, but this was severely twisted. Questions are as follows. Will a slightly twisted neck on my Washburn cause me problems whilst learning, or is the twist small enough not to make a difference? The second part of the question is, my son has asked for a BC Rich Warlock for Christmas. He's 12 and doesn't play metal. So I would recommend steering away from the Warlock to something else. What would be your recommendations for a guitar that'd be a good step up from his Strat copy? The guitars they currently have both retailed for about £120. So having a look at that picture, I think the twist in that Warlock neck will severely hinder the progress. It was quite warped, particularly like on the bass side, but towards the kind of pickups.
Yeah. It wasn't a Warlock, it was an LP copy.
Oh, sorry, the Washburn even. Yeah, it was a Washburn. So I would say that probably needs replacing. You're probably not going to be able to save that. I mean, you might be able to learn some open chords and stuff, but I just think if you're starting out, you want the guitar to be in full working condition, because otherwise it's just going to put you off. You know, you're going to find things hard to do. Bar chords up the neck might start to, you know, just some notes might kind of...
properly.
Yeah, I just... Some notes won't ring out correctly. So, I mean, what's our advice, really? For more kind of metal-focused guitars that are maybe a couple hundred quid, maybe erring towards the more pointy side of things, but...
Squire Jim Root Tele?
Yeah, what are they, like 330 quid?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I was going to say, what do the Washburn Parallaxes start at?
Probably a bit more than that.
Wait, the 549.
Is that what they start for?
Yeah,
I thought they did a cheaper one.
But yes, I mean, Squire Jim Root Tele, I know we bang on about them quite a lot, but just the quality is so, so high on that.
I actually think there are a ton of stuff kind of in that area from Squire on the... You don't even have to look at just the metal ones. Even things like the Avril Lavigne would be really suitable for metal.
Yeah,
and looks great for it. And the and her ex fella.
Derek Whibley.
Yeah, again, single pickup. I guess if you're starting out though, you maybe don't want to limit your Sonic options that much, and they're one pickup guitars. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a ton of stuff from Ibanez, also a ton of stuff from ESP. You know, you look at something like the EC100 or EC50, which are the cheaper end. I mean, they're both Les Paul style, great for metal, but also good for kind of general purpose as well. And they're not mega money, are they? They're a couple hundred quid.
The Jackson series of stuff that I want to say demolition, but that's not the right word. It's
Phil Demmel.
They do no, the whole they do run like of that a, cheaper
they do a,
stuff.
They do a run of cheaper ones. I can't. It's not like
decomposed demolition. Yeah, something like
the
that.
The decomposed series.
Yeah.
Derelict. No.
I'm surprised no one's done that in a kind of boutique guitar build, like relic bodies.
Just bury it for a bit
and then dig it up and then clean it and then.
We had those PRS guitars that had the tops that were made out of wood that had been under a riverbed for like 200 years.
You were talking about this the other day.
What about that Strat that came in? The one that was made out of that old pine door?
Yeah, the reclaimed pine.
How good did that sound?
Yeah, that was amazing.
And it had the hole that went right through it.
So David, slightly off topic there, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I would say perhaps move on from both the guitars that you've got, and for a couple of hundred quid, if you go to one of the big manufacturers, you know, if you go Ibanez, if you go ESP, you go Squire, there's some guitars that will definitely do the job and kind of help you learn, really. You don't want to be learning on stuff that isn't really up to the task. It's just going to slow your progress.
Yeah.
But if you want some advice, feel free to email it in again or, you know, get on the Facebook group. And
email us directly and we can maybe shoot back some specific models when we're sitting in front of a computer screen.
Indeed, yeah, we'll give out the email addresses at the end, so just hang around for a couple of minutes and you can speak to the guys directly and they can give you some recommendations. Lastly, we've got a question from Ollie on the Facebook group who says, so I've got a little bit of money burning a hole in my pocket, say £30 to £70, and the free space on my board. I've got everything I need, but I want something fun. Any recommendations? okay, let's do one each. So you got between 30 and 70 quid.
I'm trying to pick two. I'm trying to pick one that I haven't already mentioned today.
Well, because you were going to say Digitech Bass.
Oh, I was going to say Digitech Bass.
I'm not going to say Bass. I won't take that one.
Go on, Joe. What are you going to be?
Can I suggest maybe like...
Have you just had a stroke? You made some weird grumbling noises and then your mouth went south.
Either the Nano Metal Muff.
Wow.
Or
that's that left field.
I'm just trying to be left fieldy. But I say this one all the time.
He's a guitarist. He's not a bass player.
Yeah. With left fieldy and right fieldy.
Stereo fieldies. Man, that sounds like a dream. A fieldy's dream.
Worst album ever.
Jesus Christ. The Moore Mod Factory thing.
Oh yeah, nice. Does that come in at under 79?
No, it's £60.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I can't believe how much you get in for that.
Jay Cross.
You mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago, actually.
How much is a Ditto?
85.
89.
How much is a Jamman Solo?
69.
Jamman Solo.
There we go. Digitech Jamman Solo.
I just think if you want
to... That's a good idea, isn't it?
If you've got everything that you need and you don't have a looper, you don't have everything you need. So buy a looper.
Okay.
And Digitech Jamman Solo is less than 70 quid and they're wicked.
Matt Knight.
Moore Lo-Fi Machine.
Yeah. Oh, excellent choice.
Is that the one that makes it sound like a sort of coming through a telephone?
And yeah. That and sort or of. Game Boy. And or old
We filmed a demo of Matt playing it, and nothing you played made any sense.
Yeah,
bit of a weird one that one.
We'll put that in the forgotten pile. Maybe we should do another one.
Yeah, we should. We should do a proper demo.
I think the thing with those is you want them at the front of your pedal board, and then you want them at the after a looper, so you can just stamp on it. After
and then everything goes through this mental.
That's a great idea.
How much is a?
I should have said random tone generator.
That's literally what I was about to say. How much is a random tone generator? If you've got everything else you need,
43 quid, I think.
Just stick an RTG in.
Yeah,
there.
Something like that. About 55 now.
Yeah, they've gone up a touch. Do you know what I'm going to go for? Because I think it's a pedal that is by no means essential. But if you wanted something that you could use, you'll definitely be able to find at least one use for it. Lech Harmonix Satisfaction Fuzz.
Yeah.
Oh, the Satisfaction.
Because, I mean, it does just sound like the beginning of Satisfaction, which is essentially, I mean, I don't know what they actually use, but if it's anything like the kind of Kinks setup, it's a AC30 with a pair of scissors stuck through one of the cars.
I think they used a pencil, actually.
Okay, yeah. But it just sounds like that. It sounds exactly like that. Well, and it's not for every, you know, you wouldn't use it for the whole set, but it's good fun, really good fun.
Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think you could definitely find a use for it.
Even if it's just in like a breakdown or some, like just something to make your guitar sound completely breakdown. Different for a bit.
Yeah,
so there we go. That's what we'd recommend. Demos of most of those things on the site,
yeah,
I think.
I think so.
Definitely. So check those out. Let's wrap it up for this evening because we've been going on a fair time. Thanks to everyone for writing questions. If you want to submit your questions, do join us on the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/guitar nerds group. Or you can like us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/GAK music. Or follow us on Twitter, which is @GAK_co_UK. Or you can follow me. I think I might do it. You can follow me @Mark_random on Twitter. This week, I want to know if people actually think that Future Islands are a good band, or do people just watch them because they're really, really rubbish? Matt Knight, how can people get in touch?
You can email me for shop-related things, matt.knight@gak.co.uk, or you can tweet me, matt_knighty, that's Knight with SIE on the end, or get hold of me on the group where you'll see fancy new pictures of my fancy new pink guitar.
Yes.
Yes, and my absolute love for the Marshall One watt offset custom, which someone must buy because it's the last one in the entire country, and someone else must own
it. Is it second hand or is it new?
No, it's new.
Wow, how much?
£808, and it is the best sounding Marshall I've ever heard.
Wow, there we go.
I found out today, although I didn't realise yesterday, it goes down to 0.1 of a watt.
Oh, it's the same as what the other ones do,
yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I need to come plug that in.
I'll be plugging my 80s Japanese pink paisley strat through that.
Definitely. Jay Cross, how can people get in touch?
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk, or find me on the Twitter, JAYBM1.
Anything you want people to get in touch regarding? Tottenham's performance in the Europa League.
What time is it?
It will have kicked off, I think.
We're 5 minutes in. If someone could tweet me the score of Tottenham Besiktas, that'd be good.
A week from now.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, I need to know now, so I'm just going to look it up.
Joe Brennan, how can people get in touch?
Did you do the podcast at GAK?
No.
Do you do that anymore?
We still accept emails, podcast@gak.co.uk. I did say it earlier in the podcast.
Oh, did you?
But, I mean, I just think the Facebook group is great because people can get in there, share their opinions,
nil-nil.
Talk to us. Great.
It's not nil-nil when people are listening to this, though.
It's
nil-nil right now.
It might be. The Facebook group, we've talked about it before. It's a friendly place. Share pictures of your gear. Chat to us. Chat to other people in there. And... What's funny about sharing pictures of your gear, Joe Branton? Where can people find pictures of your gear?
You can find pictures of my gear on www.
You're going to say something rudy nudy then,
yeah,
right?
I was going to, yeah, but I'm not.
So how can people get in touch?
You don't have to do any edits on this podcast
far. How can people get in touch?
I could ruin that for you.
Come on, make it easy
on
me.
All right, I'll make it easy.
I already have to work with you on a day-to-day basis.
That's true. Yes, you can email me on joe.branton@gak.co.uk, or you can tweet me at Joseph_900, and that's everything.
Definitely do not send him any Rudy Mooney pictures.
I'm totally up for that. If anyone wants to send me any pictures with their equipment, do it.
I think, well, on that note, we should probably wrap this up. Everyone happy? All good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. All right, see you next week.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
One stand sold a necklace for £26 million. It doesn't really matter, does it?
I'm touching sides.
How much? Oh, yeah, so I wiped my ass with that this morning.
£26 million.
How did I pay? Bank transfer. Debit card.
Did you take Amex?
Oh, I left it on my debit card.
Probably more like...
the like both parties probably have an agent of some sort who sorts out the thing, and they just go, yeah, just talk to this fella and you'll get the money.
Imagine that. Imagine being the accountant for a billionaire.